This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, Larry. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes.
It's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, it's the Piano Man, JT, here with another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin, coming at you live here on this Monday evening inside PTBN Studios. And joining me, as always, the man who, hot take tonight, though, the Lido Shuffle is better than Piano Man. That's Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Well, the Lido Shuffle is better because I've just been burnt out on that song, but everything else Billy does is better than Lido Shuffle. Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 494. Of the longest-running episodic motherfucking gold standard, as it's doubleheader day in around Major League Baseball. The Mets have a doubleheader. The Yankees have a doubleheader. JR, six episodes away. Mm-hmm. Yes, I didn't say it too often from world, but five bills are, and we've got a little something about five bills later on, don't we?
Just we do. Something. We've decided on our topic for that show, and I think it's one many listeners mm-hmm. will be interested in hearing about. So we will get to that at the end of the episode.
Yes.
We will announce what episode 500 will be and how you can be involved in that. So stay
yes.
tuned.
I was excited this morning, JR, when I got up. I was looking at my phone, and you sent me a couple of photos. We are, of course, under 14 days now, and you mm-hmm. actually showed me Rhode Island weather for St. Mary's. Getting excited. Countdown's officially on.
I feel like the run-up gets tighter every time.
I know.
Like, I feel like I used to, like, think about it, and, like I feel like we'd start talking, like, in May, back in the day, when we had, like, not as much else going on. I'd be like,
I know.
Okay, you know, start the countdown, look at the weather. I'd look at, like, the almanac, you know, like, and now it's like, oh shit, we're two weeks away. I better start looking.
The almanac.
And you know that our guest tonight's actually in driving distance. Peter, if you're free on the 21st, you're welcome to come down for my yearly party, my friend Peter Winston. How are you?
Yes, Peter.
I'm good. Okay, the 21st, I think, for my magical mystery baseball tour of the summer, I'll be at Wrigley Field that night for the second of a split doubleheader between the Cubs and the Cardinals. So not going to the first game, but be
well,
going
well,
to the second game.
You could attend the party
game.
And then fly out. Maybe next year.
Yeah.
Anyway, how are you? How are you doing?
I'm a little bit appalled by your Billy Joel bashing. You know, there's a saying, I think it goes, first they came for Billy Joel, and I said nothing because I wasn't a Billy Joel fan. And it goes on and on to Huey Lewis and then on to Springsteen. It's an old proverb that I've heard. So how dare you take on Billy Joel with me and Criscola on the line? Come on, give me a break.
Look,
you're outnumbered.
You guys are coming at me without the anti-Joel army that's formed in the live chats now. This is unfair. You know, you weren't in there when Peter, I didn't see you anywhere when they were railing. You were vanished, apparently.
Now you just waited
to attack me on air.
What are you talking about? I went in and thumbs down everything. I think.
Yeah, me too.
Me and Scott just went and thumbs down. And somebody else joined in because there was something. I think somebody ripped River of Dreams. It's like, come on. Like, there's no call for that. And then it was like four thumbs down. I was very proud of whoever that was.
Yeah, three were Scott and one was you. Those were all the thumbs downs.
That's because this boy Angry Chad came on. He's got to listen to Florida Georgia Line or whatever.
Wait a minute. Scott has burner accounts in
he
the
does.
Chat?
just to downvote. Only pictures of me and D'Amato. Pictures of me and D'Amato on the beach. He's got a down thumbs down. And then he's got a thumbs down in any anti-Billy Joel rhetoric.
Oh, God.
Actually, if I had any faith that Scott could figure out how to set up burner accounts, I'd maybe buy into the theory, but I'm not too confident he can handle that.
He doesn't know.
I did like how Scott's praise of Billy Joel is completely centered around Elton John albums that sucked.
Well, because those are the two guys that when you talk
but
about.
No one brought up Elton John. It was a big time strawman argument. No one was saying Elton John was better in there.
It doesn't matter. It was my argument. Well, who the fuck are you? It was my argument.
It's like I can saying, make it oh, well, the Orioles are bad, but they're not as bad as the Royals. Like, that's what saying Billy Joel and Elton John are.
Well, who else am I supposed to compare? I mean, I was making an argument because a certain person in the chat was saying nonsense, and that was it. So
teed one up for you. Boz Gags. That was right on a platter.
Well, Boz and Billy are not even close. How many albums did Boz have? Two? I'm talking about somebody
quality
comparable.
Over quantity.
Exactly. That's why Billy only had 13 albums, and Elton had like 47.
Elton's like a porn star out in Northridge, just banging out fucking albums.
All right, now you of course you had to do it. We had a great debate. Now you had to go down that road.
I would have qualified that as a great debate, but it was a passable one. Anyway, more to come on some musical artists at PlayStation.com in the near future. So also stay tuned for that.
Yes.
So there's a tease for you. Lots of teases tonight.
This evening, however, we're going to be very close to where the three of us are, and that is Springfield, Massachusetts, because tonight we are doing, because of course Mr. Winston is here, it is the next episode on our jaunt of 1988 of Saturday Night's Main Event. It was taped on April 22nd and aired on April 30th. So April 22nd, which was the Wednesday, Friday before the house show that we did, JR, last week, and airs the following Saturday. So, of course, this was an eight-day turnover. They couldn't go too far, obviously, because of WrestleMania. So here we go. The air date, Saturday night, April 30th, 1988, from the Civic Center in Springfield, Massachusetts, a building all three of us know very well. Have you ever been to the Civic Center, Peter? Have you ever been there too for anything? The actual Civic Center itself?
I could have sworn that I was in there for some event when I was 11 or 12, not playing youth hockey, but I'm trying to remember. Is that where they have the Big E, that
yes.
event?
Yeah, that's Springfield.
That's one of the most unfortunately named events ever, especially after Kramer from Seinfeld gave it the completely different connotation. The Big E, wet and wild.
Yeah, yeah. Right. It took me a second. I thought you were going to go with a Big E Langston joke, but okay. I like the deeper cut better. And then I thought you were going for a Steve Bennett joke when you said you were at some youth hockey game somewhere up in northern Massachusetts.
No, I was there. I've been there for a lot of AHL games, Peter. Springfield Indians back in the day. I don't know what the farm team was, but I used to go there when they played. I used to drive with my brother when they played my beloved New Haven Nighthawks. Not the nicest play. And, of course, the Hall of Fame game used to be there every year, as well as I think the D2 Final Four used to be. D2 Men's Basketball Final Four was always in Springfield.
As well as Billy Joel's 478th concert in 600 days right there.
That's right. And it's another sellout. Yeah. So, unlike Elton John. No.
It's the same 3,000 people that go to every fucking show. Of course it's a sellout.
Anyway. All right. So live on this evening – there was one house show, and JR, you'll find the match list of this show quite familiar. They were in an unfamiliar place, though. They were out at the Cow Palace in San Francisco, not a normal place for them. Probably a sellout, 11,104, according to our good friend Graham Cawthon in the history of WWE.
Let's not talk about attendance at the Cow Palace. I've had enough of that this weekend. I don't know about you guys.
Well, it's good that Jim Ross was kept away from that particular show.
Yes. Yes. All right, here's your card. Again, JR, tell me if you've heard this before. Steve Lombardi pinned Brady Boone. Dino Bravo defeated Ken Patera via forfeit when Patera was unable to compete after Bravo attacked and injured him during their arm wrestling contest. Bret Hart fought Bad News Brown to a 20-minute draw. Rick Rude pinned Don Morocco by using the ropes for leverage. Ted DiBiase defeated world champion Randy Savage by countout. Lanny Poffo pinned Barry Horowitz. The Ultimate Warrior defeated Hercules, and in the main event, Tito Santana and Rick Martel, of course, Strikeforce, defeated World Tag Team Champions Demolition via disqualification. Does this card look familiar to you?
Sounds
for the most part. Of course, it was pretty much 90% of the MSG House show that we did last Monday. I think it wasn't Lanny and Barry. It wasn't Lanny. It was somebody else.
Yes, it was much worse.
It was Jose Luis Rivera.
Yes.
Yeah, much
worse. Yes.
Do we
I like
have
to
Rude
think
Morocco?
Somewhere that Kelly is like reviewing that Cow Palace show on another podcast.
Yes.
Hating himself.
Rude Morocco, I don't think we had. And everything else we had. So it was pretty much the same cards. They must have been doing the same loop, obviously, for the past week. So that was the live show on this actual Saturday evening, JR. Any other news and notes before we begin?
No, we're actually good. But I do like to think somewhere when you accidentally called Peter Pete a few minutes ago that Pete Schermacher woke up from a snooze on his
toe
and just shot up.
I knew you were going to say something. I know. You're not really a sheriff, Peter, but you're getting there.
Yes. Mm. Deputy Peter.
You're getting there. Deputy Peter.
All right. No other notes, so we're here. Why don't we dive in?
Yep.
All right. Our first segment event since WrestleMania 4, so lots to discuss, bringing the NBC viewers up to speed. We open with some promos from Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Bobby Heenan, Andre the Giant, and Hercules, One Man Gang and the Slickster, and Randy Savage and Elizabeth. And then we get our opening animation, and then head over to Vince McMahon, Jesse Ventura, welcoming us in and running down tonight's activities. Gene's in with Bobby, Andre, and Herc. Bobby calls Gene a jerk and a cow pie, and then talks about how the family takes care of business and never forgets. Bobby keeps calling Duggan Jigsaw Jim, and Andre says ho at the end. That was a pretty funny little interview. I kind of enjoyed it, even though the Jigsaw thing. I felt like it was kind of Bobby running a joke into the ground that wasn't quite too funny, unless you guys enjoyed it.
They liked alliteration, but Andre doing the mocking ho, always great.
That was great. Oh, it was tremendous. Great. I agree.
All right, Gene then talks to Hacksaw, says he wants to take out Hercules and have a shot at Andre, who cost him his Mania tourney match. So I like that through line as well, that we're picking up on the Doug and Andre feud because he did screw him in the first round at Mania. So that brings us to our opener, and that's Jim Duggan and Hercules. Herc, Heenan, and Andre stomp out, followed by Hacksaw gets a big pop. Jesse says he sounds like a wounded water buffalo in heat, which made me laugh as well. Bobby and Andre confer as Herc gets some heavy blows. Duggan fights right back and unloads a strike offense. Herc gets battered around until Duggan misses a knee drop. The crowd dumps on Weasel as Herc slugs away and goes to the eyes to cut off a comeback. Duggan reverses a whip but misses a charge and slams into the corner. Herc keeps peppering and choking away and then shoves Hacksaw to the floor. Back inside, Herc cracks him at the back elbow and keeps stomping away. Bobby takes a swipe at Duggan, who grabs his board and clears everyone out. We take a break. When we return, the ref is tied up with Duggan, allowing Herc to drill him from behind and unload more strikes. Duggan then tries to fight back, but Hercules is all over him, keeping him grounded. Duggan finally mounts a punch-based comeback, hits a three-point stance, but Bobby comes in and breaks up the count with a great knee drop. He just flies through the air and slams into Duggan, drawing the DQ. Andre comes in, and the family beats down Duggan until the Ultimate Warrior makes a save, which pisses off Jesse. This is fine. It was a solid brawl, a lot of hard-hitting strikes. Herc continues to be good in the ring in these spots, and Duggan is over enough to keep things heated. So I actually went 2 stars on this, Scott. I thought it was an enjoyable enough brawl, and I've been on the Herc bandwagon.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've really enjoyed Herc and his in-ring work. I like the match. I thought it was pretty solid. I feel like Herc is slowly starting to maybe turn the corner. I don't want to say he got face pops, but the boos weren't as deep as they usually are. Duggan is slowly getting that kind of move up the card. He's still wearing the his Mid-South tights, though. I figured he had gone to the lighter shade of blue, the lighter shade of blue than that he would be accustomed to. I gave this match I have to check my screen changed. I'll check the grade in a second, but I have to say I liked the fact that Duggan has been enveloped into the Heenan family storyline, kind of like rebooting with some new guys, some new characters after the WrestleMania 4 thing has ended, and we have new Bobby now has Andre back, DiBiase doesn't need him anymore, so it's kind of separated that out a little bit. So it's good to see, as much as I hate Duggan, it's good to see some fresh blood working with the Heenans. I gave it a star. It served its purpose. I really do agree with you about Hercules, though. He has been much better in the ring, Peter, than I think anybody has really given him credit for. Now that we really look at it, particularly, I mean, these TV matches we've always said are tough to deal with because it's not a lot of time. But as JR and I have watched a lot of house show matches, Hercules, when working with the right guy, can kind of intersperse his power stuff and put on a pretty decent match. And this wasn't that bad. I mean, Duggan's not exactly, Ricky Steamboat or anything, but I thought it served its purpose.
I think Hercules is one of those guys where when you watch more of him, you don't necessarily grow to love him or anything. You just grow to not hate him quite so much as you might have if you hadn't watched all of his stuff. This one, for the older school fans, is a nice little Mid-South 1984 classic, but oh, yeah, with some manner of depreciation. You can write off a little bit of this match due to that. Of course, I love having Jesse there for the Saturday Night main events, and we get like the highest of high Jesse and the lowest of low Jesse, like in back to back lines from him early in the match when he says that Duggan sounds like a quote wounded water buffalo in heat.
Mm-hmm.
I laughed for like 30 seconds at that one. Mm-hmm. And then right after he says to Vince, "Hey, isn't Ed McMahon your illegitimate son?"
Yes.
And I was like, what? It like reminded me of this time in high school. This guy said that Pink Floyd was imitation U2, which just, I was like, I don't even know where to begin to tell you what's wrong with that. Just what we need, more music talk.
comparisons and shitty acts.
That Bobby Heenan hop out of the ring when Duggan was chasing after him.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the 10 best common WWF spots of the 80s. Like, the way he would just fly over, like a gymnast on the vault. Like, I'm surprised nobody else has really, like, learned that, but it truly is sort of one of a kind.
Yeah, I don't know if it would ever look as good unless you're like kind of pudgy like him, because at his size and shape, it made it look even more impressive, because he's just kind of this, you know, chubby short guy, and all of a sudden he's flying over the top, and it's impressive too. He never really got hurt doing it. Like, I mean, it's like he stuck it every time, which is crazy.
I got really distracted during this match because I noticed something really off in the front row opposite hard camera. That there were six people in a row all wearing the same Macho Man shirt. And I was like, something like some alarm was going off in my head. Like, all of these people bought the exact same shirt and they're wearing it over their collared shirt. I don't know about that. It was a little too conspicuous. But the screwy finish had to be expected here. You weren't going to have, you know, a clean finish. And you got Andre the Giant, the closer, once again, taking care of business. Mm-hmm. And this is the first you see of the Warrior, I think, on NBC. I don't think he's been on any of the Saturday Night main events, probably because they didn't trust him to do anything. And he comes out in the Laker purple for Scott.
Excited
and
for LeBron.
Made me wonder, is the Warrior going to join LeBron in Los Angeles? Oh, wait, no, he's not. But I give this a star and a half. It was good enough.
Yeah. You said something a while ago, but then you talked a lot, and I kind of forgot the point I was gonna. actually, Scott said it, so it was about 25 minutes ago. It was the Andre having a new feud, which, you know, as great as Andre Hogan was, and it's not over. Obviously, we'll get more of it, but it is nice for him to have a little side diversion. Like, we haven't really seen him with anybody else since what? The fucking Machines. I mean, like when is the last time we've seen him paired with anyone but Hogan?
Almost a year and a half.
Mid-'86, yeah.
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 And even then, like, who was he really? I would go back almost to the Colossal Jostle stuff, like with Bundy and stuff. Like, that's really the last feud he's had, right? Because even 86, mm-hmm. at 2, he's in the Battle Royal, and then the Machine stuff. So, like, he hasn't really, outside of, like, Stud and Bundy, like we haven't really seen him in a prime spot outside of Hogan, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it helped Duggan quite a bit, mm-hmm. to get him up to that upper mid card level where, you know, he'd pretty much be for like the rest of his time there, I think.
Yeah, I just think it's nice to have. It's a weird spot for Andre to be involved in something lower than the main event, because, you know, he's been the main event heel for pretty much his whole time. Even when he was not on camera for a lot of the middle of 87, he was still treated like the guy. And so it's just a nice change of pace, and it's good to see more of that come from him. But, yeah, I mean, the Hogan stuff, because we've never seen – we saw the match at WrestleMania 3, which was sort of definitive and maybe not, and then, of course, the what happened at the main event, and then WrestleMania 4. So, obviously, we don't have a Hogan-Andre conclusive match with a conclusive finish. So you know that's on the horizon. You're right, JR. But it's nice to have Andre kind of working some other stuff. So look good here. And Duggan's the right guy for it because Duggan's one of those guys. He's just a, you know, thick guy who could just take any kind of beating and deliver it. So it works out good here.
Yeah, no, I agree. So it'll be interesting to see where they go with it. But yeah, for a bit, it's nice to see him away from Hogan, as great as it's been. So, all right, we head back to WrestleMania. We get clips of Brutus Beefcake's match with the Honky Tonk Man, and then Mean Gene is with Danny Davis and Jimmy Hart, who has a beret on and says they're going to even the score tonight. They have a bag full of scissors and clippers with them, too. Gene's in with Brutus Beefcake, who says you need technique and more to get it done, but not just the tools. He says it's a two-for-one at Brutus Barber College tonight, and Davis will get the full treatment. That does bring us to our next exciting battle. That is Brutus the Barber Beefcake taking on the moldy, dangerous Danny Davis, who somehow is still hanging around. Davis and Jimmy come out with their scissors, get cascaded with booze. Beefcake gets a nice little pop. He shoves down Danny to get things going. Jesse says both guys look like candy canes with their tights. Brutus chucks Danny around, but Danny finds an opening. He's able to choke away for a minute. Brutus catches him with a hard, stiff knee in a sloppy spot as Davis ducked too soon. And then it's very clear that Davis is out on his feet as Brutus gives the most gentle body slam you've ever seen outside of maybe Glow. Davis rolls outside and wobbles around with Jimmy. Beefcake carefully snapmares him in and quickly gets a sleeper as Jimmy's like trying to run around and mix it up, get in the mix to break it up. Like he's just running aimlessly in circles. It was nothing to start and then got worse after the injury. I will give credit to Beefcake because he really protected Davis after the injury, but it completely derailed the match. Beefcake grabs his mirror and scissors and gives Danny a little haircut as he snoozes. So I went a half star, like, you know, mainly I'll give a half star credit to Beefcake for not murdering Davis. He clearly realized right away that he crushed him with that knee lift and then was very careful with him. Mm-hmm. I will say, I mean, it's obvious that he was hurt and the match ended up sucking. Are you guys surprised that they kept this in the airing and didn't like film a backup match that night or something? Peter, I guess I'll start with you. You're up.
I don't know, because I think that Ebersol really liked the whole haircut thing and just wanted to get that out there. Although there are a lot of matches on this. So what do we have? What do we have? Six total matches.
They also could have reshot, though. Like, they could have Beefcake go out against somebody else, too. Like after later in the night, just have, I mean, whatever. It's not that bad, but it's clear he gets his bell rung and he's a fucking mess. Like, it's, I'm shocked that they aired it, to be honest. Like, that's how it's real obvious that Davis is just out on his feet.
Well, I mean, I guess it's some manner of payoff for all the Danny Davis stuff that had been going on back to late 86. And you got, you're almost 2 years later. I mean, you know, talk about stuff that got stretched out, but Davis had an expiration date and it was whelp. He kind of was spoiled milk at this point, because by August of 87 he just cooled down so much, and there was only so much you could get out of him with like his like weird smirk in interviews, because he couldn't really talk and Jimmy had to do the whole thing. Although you know, with him, he kind of looks like Peter North's douchey brother. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But yeah, Beefcake did an okay job. I didn't really notice as much that Davis was hurt, but now that you say that, the match actually makes a lot more sense, because you have that obvious botch that, you know, Vince is like, oh, Davis tried to go low. But
right. He crushes him. I rewatched it twice, and he really drills him with that knee. And then David, I mean, he's like out of it. Like, he stumbles to the floor. And then the real giveaway is that Beefcake is like super, super cautious. Like, rewatch that body slam. He like gently lays him down on his back. It's pretty clear that he's fucked up. But as far as Davis as a, character, like, it's fine if you want to keep him around for a job out of the stars, but like putting him in positions like this with Jimmy Hart, like, I don't know, like, I feel like that part of it's definitely done. If you want to leave him on TV as like the, you know, the better end of a jobber tag team, like they would do sometimes, you know, like they could have done something like that. But I think actually still getting kind of preeminent spots with Jimmy Hart and being presented as something legit is really overdue.
Well, I think that he's a guy that you could throw out there and have him get his hair cut, where I was trying to think of other guys you could have put in this spot. And you know, you already did Beefcake Valentine, and you're not going to waste him. So he's the low guy on the totem pole. for the I did like the post-match stuff where they didn't like shave his head completely or anything with the whole skunk business, and they said that B was for Beefcake, and I had always wondered if it was B for Brutus, B for Beefcake, B for Barber, or B for Bruins, because Ed Leslie, big Boston Bruins fan. I've seen him at TD Garden on numerous occasions. True story.
Was he at the games, or was he outside, you know, doing something else with people walking in?
I have actually seen him in the building at back in 2009, and then he was on the Jumbotron a lot during the Carolina series that the Bruins ended up losing. So I actually blame Beefcake Barber for the fact that they lost that series that they should have won. I also saw him on a flight to Chicago when I was going to Bruins and Blackhawks, and I'm like, he has to be going to that. He's not booked for. There's no way Ed Leslie is booked for an indie show in Illinois in 2011. It's just completely impossible. Yeah,
I think it's possible. I thought you were going to say a B for Brian Blair. That's what I was waiting for.
By the way, the spray paint job, he looked like spoiled milk. His hair was like, it looked horrendous. I mean, seriously, I agree with you, Peter. There really is no one else at this time that you could have stuck in the Beefcake role, and Brutus obviously was here for a big push, trying to keep him hot after the kind of skunky, no pun intended, ending to the title match at WrestleMania. So trying to keep him hot right now and keeping him, you know, a future opponent again for Honky. So you need to do something here. But, yeah, you could have had him in this match, and you didn't need Jimmy Hart, and you didn't need all the, you know, hoi-folloi. He could have already been in the ring and just had Brutus come out and beat him if you need him in there. You didn't have to have him get, like, a pre-match interview and all this stuff like he's actually a real Jimmy Hart member.
Well,
anymore.
I think with Sammy's main event, I think they do interviews for every match for everyone.
That's
what it seems,
true.
Anyway. I think they always do. Everyone gets an interview before every match, so, which is fine. Yeah. Again, we have to remember this is a completely different universe, and they are introducing the NBC audience like every time to everything. Like this is really a hammer in the head show every month.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right about that. And I mean, I give it a half a star. There really wasn't much to go on here. Again, it was just a chance to push Beefcake more. I didn't really remember Jimmy Hart's hair being that short, but the whole unless he's tucking it in, but it looks like it's legitimately cut. Which is kind of wild because I don't remember Jimmy Hart's hair ever being that short, so it's kind of cool actually.
He did get quite a trim at 4, but he also got a milder trim on Superstars late in 87. And I was trying to make an accounting of how many times Beefcake cut that guy's hair, and I'm not sure I can count that high.
Yeah, it grows pretty fast. Apparently, it must be something in the Memphis water. Yeah, there's not much more to say here. I mean, it's keeping Beefcake strong, and you know, Danny Davis is just fodder. We got to look ahead to see how much more we see him on TV. I'm trying to remember when he actually goes back into the ref pool.
I think he's there. Is he at Survivor Series?
He's in the match. He actually loses to Beefcake in the first 30 seconds.
That's
via
and then
via sleeper.
I think he's done by 89. I think he's back into referee.
I think February of 89. I think he's. As a referee again, or right after WrestleMania 5, which so much for Gorilla Monsoon suspended for life plus 10 years.
Well, then you know, but then it's never even mentioned again, and it's just he's just referee Danny Davis. It's not even.
Well, they do officially reinstate him though, right? Like that's an official thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So anyway, Beefcake wins. No surprise there. Trying to keep him strong. You know, to get a in all likelihood a second Intercontinental title shot with Honky.
Yeah, I think it was better than the first.
I know.
I was gonna look up quick on Graham and see how many matches Davis had in '89. So, let's see.
There has to be a decent window that he's not on TV, so you can kind of sort of reset him.
Well, on May 14th, challenge, it says recently reinstated Danny Davis was referee. Right here, 422 Superstars, Jesse Ventura announces that Danny Davis has been reinstated under probation. His last match looks to be March 22nd in Minnesota against Sam Houston. It looks like he's paired with Houston and a few other guys throughout most 89. So he goes into 89 a bit. I mean, the first quarter. So.
Mm. Okay. And look, all right, so if they do a reinstatement thing, then I can see that now. Okay.
Yeah. So he basically had, he basically has 2 years as an active wrestler, which is about a year and a half longer than we needed. But
yes.
Yes. All right. Let's go to our next match. But before that, actually, we go backstage. Actually, even before that, we get clips from WrestleMania where Randy Savage had defeated the One Man Gang via one of the stupidest disqualifications I'll ever you will ever see. Gene is then with Gang and Slick, and they take issue with that DQ of Mania. Slick says Gang was just protecting Slick. And Liz is messing with the referee, and tonight greatness will shine bright. Gene then talks to Savage and Liz. Gene gives Liz credit for being the first female manager of a WWF champion, and Savage adds on to that as well. He says he's going past the danger zone to the madness to defend his title tonight. I thought this was usual, great Savage, as always. And that brings us to our nominal main event, and that is Macho Man Randy Savage taking on the One Man Gang for the World Wrestling Federation Championship in the first televised defense for... First nationally televised defense for Macho Man. Slick and Gang dance out to Jive Soul Bro, which is epic as always. Savage and Liz then march out to a big pop, and this is another big spot for Savage, his first national TV defense. Gang was protected at Mania so he could be strong here, which I guess in a vacuum makes sense. It's just when you put it with the nine other shit finishes at WrestleMania, made it feel a lot worse, but I'm, you know, okay. And of course, Scott, you know, actually, before you get into the match, Peter, I'm curious your thoughts. What did you guys listen to last week's episode?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
What were your thoughts on the whole Savage DiBiase finish at MSG, and would you have used Gang there to bridge and then give Savage a win and then move on to the DiBiase feud, or what are your thoughts on that?
I was surprised at the amount of passion surrounding that finish. I thought it made perfect sense as a part one of a three-match arc at like an MSG, because you go back 25 years and that's how they always had done things. So I didn't quite understand why there was so much anger behind.
I think it was just because he had, I don't know, my point was that he had just won and he was new, you know, like he needed to be established on some level in that role. So that was my only beef. And again, I was fine with the fuck finish. I just thought maybe like him losing by count out was a bit much in his first match as champ.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I agree, Peter, that it was a great finish for a first match arc, but there should have been some wins for him before the arc started. And then you do this instead of doing it right out of the gate.
But I think that this match, the TV match that we have here with the Gang, is a much more important one because you have a much larger audience that's going to see it. It'll be embedded in their mind.
Yeah, no, I mean, it, you know, it's a fair point. What else are we going to talk about, you know? But but no, I was curious. It was interesting because that was his first match. And, you know, I think sometimes, Scott, we do overlook the fact that how we're so enveloped in the MSG mentality because we've been watching them all that you kind of forget, you know, only those people were seeing it. But it's still, that was still like their major audience at that point. But anyway, so here we go. Gang, like we said, was protected to be strong here. Slick gets near Liz and Savage chases him off before we get going. Savage ducks and dodges before locking up with the Gang, who uses his size to shove the champ around the ring. Savage peppers some blows, gets a crossbody for one. Savage's nonstop energy here, running all over the place, getting a crossbody off the top for two. Gang eventually catches him in the corner with a battering ram and starts to lean and bang on Savage. Gang drops him after hoisting him up to a double choke, and then Slick chokes away with the cane. Savage squirts away and chases Slick, but Gang catches him and goes back to work. Jesse thinks Savage is in deep trouble as Gang is really in control. Savage finds a burst and knocks Gang to the floor and rocks him with an axe handle off the top rope. Slick works to rally Gang, who slides back in and catches a leaping Macho with a punch. Gang slams Savage and goes to the middle rope, but whiffs on a splash to a pop. Slick goes after Liz, and Savage takes a swipe at him, but Gang clobbers Savage from behind. Jesse reiterates that Liz is a detriment as Gang stomps on the champ. Liz ties up the ref, so Slick tries to use his cane, but Savage ducks, and Gang takes the shot instead in a real awkward spot. Savage flies to the top and hits the elbow for the win. Really fun match. Savage is just insanely fun. I mean, just full of wild energy, flying all over the place. And Gang was solid. You know, not spectacular, but solid. He had some awkward spots, including that awful telegraphed cane shot. Savage remains on top of the mountain. I went 2.5 on the Scott. And what is the problem with Gang and Slick being unable to get coordinated on these spots? We saw Mania with the hug fall and the other cane. It's like they're all out of fucking sync with these interference spots. It's very, very frustrating. But I liked the match. I thought Gang held up well, and Savage gets his pinfall win over him.
I gave this 2 stars. It's don't know if it's supposed to be like some kind of gimmick where they don't know what the hell they're doing half the time, or if they really don't know what they're doing. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's kind of a mess. But this is probably yes. I mean, if we were in some podunk town instead of the Garden. On a side note, by the way, I have to say, while I just looked at it, JR, somebody's holding a sign up, and Peter, you would appreciate this too. Somebody just held a sign up at Raw that said Kowloon Sushi on Raw.
Yes.
Pretty cool since we've been to Kowloon's. Anyway, and I get that the Garden is in the grand scheme of things a local venue, but it is a lot of people, but not like this lot of people. So yes, it makes sense to give him a definitive win against a big guy on national TV. So in this instance, Savage is being booked very, very well to knock out a big dude, even though there was, you know, heel nonsense, miscommunication. A win's a win, and you take it. And Savage was a boss. The crowd's really into him, so I don't think there's any issues with pops. Obviously, you're in New England, so, you know, the crowds are going to be great anyway. And the gang, as we've seen, is a pretty good, you know, heel challenger. We saw him get a shot at Hogan a while back, so he's a good, you know, on camera guy to have as a good heel challenger. But Savage looks fantastic here, very crisp, and I think that I think it's a good way for him to get a big win, but keep DiBiase, who we'll actually talk about shortly. Still on the, you know, on the radar for Savage as a future world title contender. So I enjoyed this, Peter. I thought it was a solid enough win for Savage. Gang is a credible challenger, even though the kind of shenanigans at the end kind of maybe take away from it. But was it a clean enough win for Savage, even with the shenanigans? Is it good? Did it need to be more definitive, or did it work out fine?
It was fine. Yeah, it was fine. I mean,
oh, yeah.
And the thing you'd remember too is on TV, guys like Gang never really lost, you know, by pin, like right. Whether it was on Superstars Challenge, you know, wherever it was, we rarely saw a pinfall losses for a guy where Gang is pretty much at that mid upper card line. So for him to get pinned in any way was fine. I mean, that's not something you saw often.
Right. Right. So what were your thoughts, Peter?
Well, 2.5 stars for me. And I had said the last time that Savage is just the best Saturday Night Main Event style worker that you could possibly have, where it's just constant motion, but not too fast. So he's not like, you know, Sabu or something like that, where he's just going too fast. But, you know, he's maintaining some psychology and storytelling. I think he just brings all the elements. And one of the themes of this show, and we've talked about it, I think, in the last two matches, is I think this is the right opponent for him, because the logical four opponents you could have had for Savage were his four opponents from the tournament. And Reed is gone, and you don't want to waste DiBiase in this spot, so you bring it between the Gang and Valentine, and Gang is a better choice because it makes Savage more of an underdog, because you got the big fat guy, and you can give him the win. They don't really have any plans for the Gang at all.
He pinned Valentine clean at Mania too.
That is yes.
So yep. And that might have been part of the plan. You could say, well, if they were going to have Valentine here, they wouldn't have pinned him. But I think the way that I'm with you, I think the way they did it worked well.
There were two things during this match that amused me greatly. When the Gang got, I think it was the double axe handle by Savage to the outside, the Gang fell into a cameraman, which was one thing. But the best part was the cameraman laying on his back and continuing to take pictures while laying next to the guardrail. I was like, that is commitment to your craft. I don't know who that guy is, but he might actually win MVP of the show for me tonight. And when the Gang went up and did the splash, or when he had the mist splash, I noticed he did a thing with his arms that reminded me very much of Dusty Rhodes. Maybe it was a tribute to the Midnight Rider angle that was kicking off on the other side of the world at that time. And, you know, just showing that maybe he could play a Dusty cosplay character. I don't know, just spitballing down the road. But I think the important thing, you said it could Macho have won cleaner. I don't think it really mattered. Mm-hmm. I think it was important for him to win with his move.
Right.
Which that was all that they really needed to do. Because the big elbow from the top in terms of how iconic it was, I rank it right up there with the Jimmy Snuka splash from, like, you know, 82 to 84 in terms of, you know, the kind of pop that it would get. So it was important to get that and for him to win that way. Everything else, I think, is all kind of irrelevant. But good match, as to be expected from Savage in this spot.
And the Slick Kane shot was such a pussy-looking shot. Like, it's not like he laid out the gang and then that was it. I mean, you know, he was kind of just had to brush it off. So, yeah, no, I'm with you. That Snuka splash was so well protected, too. I'm watching some ECWs. I'm into 94. And, like, they're still, like, Dreamer kicks out of it in that early 94, and they say, oh, it's the first time anyone's ever kicked out of it. And it's like that splash was so well protected that it carried into 94, and it was part of a major angle there. So I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Absolutely. So Randy Savage retains his World Wrestling Federation title. Why don't we take a breather? JR, what do you think so far? Pretty solid post-Mania television program.
Yeah, I mean, they've gotten their points across so far. We saw Beefcake keep his thing going with Jimmy Hart. We've seen the Heenan family. You know, their two new feuds that are kind of cropping up here with Duggan and eventually Ultimate Warrior, like, those were teased. And Savage gets his big title match win. So, yeah, no, I think we're off to a pretty good start here.
We are pretty good. Peter, not bad.
Yeah, very good, sir. Yeah.
We'll take a break. We come back. Three more matches, including another title match. The tag team titles on the line, and much more. But first, let's get some words in, because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceForNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcast, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is legendary ring announcer and WWE Hall of Famer, the Fink, Howard Finkel. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
Chat group, and everyone took a big old dump on Billy Joel. So and where does that broken heart go, Scott? And you tell me. I tried last week. I know.
I think I did this
week. But that is the number one song in the nation, I guess, this week, and that is Where Do Broken Hearts Go? Whitney Houston. And to talk about that and more in our Pop Culture Corner here tonight is Scott Criscola.
Thank you, JR, and obviously the broken heart will not go to Wrestling Warzone, so you and Chad can really trash Billy Joel amongst...
Hopefully this week, a new episode of Wrestling Warzone. In Your House 4, speaking of broken
yes,
hearts.
In Your House 4. Billy Joel did not sing the national anthem. Anyway, so Whitney, second straight week, as, of course, the new Billboard Hot 100 came out on this day, as, of course, we are talking about Saturday. So Whitney with for the second straight week at number one, and guess what's number two? JR's new favorite mystery 80s one-hit wonder, little Terrence Trent D'Arby.
Yes.
The Wishing Well. Wishing Come on, Peter.
Well. Kiss and Tell.
Gotta love Terrence Trent D'Arby. Number two with Wishing Well. Number three, Angel by Aerosmith from the awesome Permanent Vacation album. Devil Inside by INXS at number four. A lot of the songs will probably be the same as last week since we're only a one-week difference. Anything for You by Gloria Estefan and the Miami Sound Machine at number five. Another favorite of JR's and mine, a little Billy Ocean, with Get Out of My Dreams, Get Into Peter's Car. Mm-hmm. Another car song, Pink Cadillac by Natalie Cole. And number eight, a little Prove Your Love by Taylor Dane. Number nine, another hottie there, Tiffany with I Saw Him Standing There. And at number 10, Girlfriend by Pebbles.
Nelly.
No. Pebbles. So there is your top 10 for this week. As you can see, most of the songs were the same as last week, just moved around. But Whitney was not usurped. She is still the number one song in the land with Where Do Broken Hearts Go?
Straight to hell.
Straight to hell. All right. Let's see. Two movies out the day before JR on Friday the 29th. A big sequel right here. A big sequel. Critters 2, The Main Course.
Hmm. All right, let's pull that shit up. Out in space on a desolate planet, shape-shifting bounty hunters Ugg and Lee and their human companion Charlie McFadden search for a vicious worm-like creature. After killing the beast, they depart the planet, and soon afterward, they receive a new message assignment from Xanti, head of the High Council. Tells them that the critters are still on Earth, and they must be destroyed. With that, they set course to Earth for a special ravioli dinner. Right? Kind of sounds like that. Notice Charlie brooding. Ugg inquires what's wrong. Charlie states, I don't care about the rest of the shit. All right, who's Scott Grimes? See, Scott. Don Keith Opper, Terrence Mann, Barry Corbin, Lindsay Parker. That's about it. Nothing else.
Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin's having a ravioli dinner. anyway, the first Critters came out in 86. A lot of people thought it was a cheap knockoff of Gremlins. It probably was.
Yes.
Can't believe there was a sequel. All right. The second movie that came out, JR, is one of these mystery action noir films. It is titled Sunset. Just Sunset.
All right. Hang on. A lot of stuff for Sunset here. I go to the disambiguation. United States, figurative uses. Sunset film. Here we go. All right, in Hollywood in the late 1920s, during the waning days of the industry's transition to sound film, producer and studio head Alfie Alperin wants to produce an epic Western film about Wyatt Earp. Tom Mix is cast as the great United States Marshal, and the real Earp is on set as a technical advisor. Starring Bruce Willis, James Garner, Malcolm McDowell, Mariel Hemingway, Kathleen Quinlan. See anyone else we should know? Dermot Mulroney. John Fountain. Beavis Faversham.
Probably this was Bruce Willis's second, only second film.
Yeah.
After First Date, of course, he was already on TV at the time with Moonlighting. So
it's actually this quote by Roger Ebert kind of reminds me of Greetings from Allentown. I think it could be. I think you should put this in the write up of your show, Peter. The strangest thing about Sunset is it's not a comedy, not exactly. It has some laughs, but it's sort of low key. I don't know this word. I'm sorry. Mood film. El Gigante, a mood film. Elegiac.
Yeah, I'm looking at the same thing you are, and I have no idea how to pronounce that.
All right, so, good. I'm glad it's not just me. I feel real dumb for a minute. But
so I couldn't put that in the description for my show. The thing that blows me away looking at this is $19 million budget, and it did $4.6 million at the box office.
Yeah. Most of it was James Garner's salary, probably.
All right, it says the adjective can have two possible meanings. It can refer to something of relating to or involving an elegy or something that expresses similar mournfulness or sorrow. So, there you go.
All right.
Interesting. Okay. Hey, it won. Anyway. It did win a couple of Razzies. So there you go.
Elegiac. Google a dictionary tells me. So there you go.
Okay. All right, and there were your two movies that came out the day before. All right. Let's go to the diamond, and I know Mr. Winston is dreading this because we all know how his team was in 1985.
Oh.
Which team was he a fan of at that point? I don't know. He's all over the place. Jumps around.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, I would have been a Red Sox fan in 1988. This is before Morgan Magic taking hold. But yes, I know exactly where the Orioles were at that point in time.
Yes.
So anyway, go ahead.
All right. Well, it's a Saturday, as mentioned. So a full slate of games on that day. The Orioles were 4-1 losers. Well, the Red Sox were 8-3 winners at Fenway against the Twins. Bruce Hurst was 4-0. The Orioles were 4-1 losers at Comiskey against the White Sox. Losers. The Mets. 6-5 winners in Cincinnati, and the Yankees with a 15-3 win over the Rangers at the stadium. Richard Dotson Z28 with the win at 3-0, and guess who had the big day on that day, JR?
Jesse Barfield.
7 RBIs for Pags. Mike Pagliarulo with 7 ribbies.
The pride of Medford.
That's right. The standings as of on this date. The Indians were leading the AL East at 16-6. The Yankees were in second at 16-7, a half game out. The Baltimore Orioles, the Red Sox were in third at 14-6. The Orioles were 1-22.
And you want to know what's great? As we speak right now, the Orioles are 25-65 after 90 games. That's actually 4 games behind the pace of the 88 Orioles. So you're trailing a team that lost its first 21 games of the season. You have to work really hard to do that.
In 23 games, they gave up 133. Oh, that's awful.
And in 1988, too, when things were a little different back then.
Yes. Cal Sr. was the manager. I'm sure he was.
Well, for 6 games, and then they canned his ass. And then
yeah.
Frank Robinson loses his first 15 games as manager.
Yes. dreadful. In the AL West, the Oakland A's have kind of finally forged ahead. They're 16-7, 3.5 ahead of the Royals. The Pirates lead the NL East at 16-6. The Mets are in second at 15-6. And in the NL West, the Astros are 14-7, a half game ahead of the Dodgers. So there's the day in baseball. In the NBA playoffs, there were 3 games on this date. Game all the Silverdome in Pontiac, the Pistons hung on to beat the Bullets 102-101. They lead that series 2-0. Game 2 from Reunion Arena in Dallas, the Mavs lose to Houston 119-108. That series is 1-1. And from the old Coliseum out in Portland, the Trailblazers lose to Utah 114-105. That series is tied at 1. There was 1 NHL playoff game on this day. It was from the Cap Center in Landover, Game 7 of the Patrick Division Finals. and the New Jersey Devils defeated the Washington Capitals 3-2, which means, as you know, Mr. Winston, the Wales Conference Finals were the New Jersey Devils and our Boston Bruins. We might as well talk about it now, because by the time we our next show, JR, the series would have been over. Of course, the Bruins would go on to win this series in seven and make it to the 1988 Stanley Cup Finals. Do you remember the awesome, infamous incident that happened in this series, Peter, in Game 3? Do you remember this? Do you remember what happened?
Well, the game. I was going to say that there was more than one awesome thing that happened with the coach of New Jersey, Jim Schoenfeld, berating Don Koharski, the referee, as he's coming off the ice.
Yep.
And then Koharski trips over something in the hallway, falls over, like, "Hey, you fell, you fat pig. Have another." And then he throws out, "Have another donut," like as if him being fat.
Have another donut, you fat
ball.
Pig.
And then eventually the next game, the referees go on strike because they weren't going to suspend Schoenfeld or something, and then they had to use replacement officials wearing these like pea yellow jerseys because they couldn't wear like the official referee and linesman jerseys. It was just such a mess. And then they couldn't find the NHL president for like 24 hours. Like he went completely AWOL. Like this was the NHL 30 years ago, folks. I mean, it was so crazy.
But, I believe what's his name was still the commissioner.
John Ziegler.
John Ziegler, I think, was still. I don't think Bettman took over till what, like 90 or 91, I think.
93, I want to say. There was a guy in between for a year who he got canned in part because he engineered an election of himself to the Hall of Fame that was then rescinded. Gil Stein.
If anyone wants a snapshot of what happens when we end these shows with Peter, this is it. I usually just edit the show while these two talk about this ridiculous 1980 sports stuff. So, are we almost done?
In 494 episodes of Place to Be podcast, Gil Stein has never come up before.
That's right.
I guarantee.
And I guarantee you he'll never come up again. Thank you.
Never come up again. Anyway, so your conference finals, the Wales final was Bruins Devils.
All right, go ahead.
The Campbell is Red Wings Oilers. Actually, no, I'm not done because we have a special little tidbit. As a matter of fact, if Glenn Butler was doing the Wednesday walk around the web in 1988 when there was no web, Wednesday walk around, he would have probably done this because on this date in 1988.
This update feels like it started in 1988.
The country of Australia did World Expo 88, which was a specialized expo in Brisbane during a 6-month period. It was during their bicentennial of the country of Australia. So it was a big deal, and that's what started on this date in 1988, World Expo 88 in Australia.
I was going to say maybe Stacey O'Loughlin was there, but I don't think she was born yet.
So there you go. Yes, it was $625 million, whatever their money is, by far the largest event of the bicentennial celebrations of the European settlement of Australia, and it attracted more than 15.7 million visitors. So pretty good. And that is your Pop Culture Corner. JR, back to Springfield.
Okay, where are we? Gene talks that the British Bulldogs are fawning over and say they will protect Matilda tonight. I mean, they're like literally like I'm just waiting for Davey to like slip his pants down and to slide right inside Matilda. Like that is like how much they're just like gushing over here tonight. Really putting on a show. Jesse then talks to Demolition and Fuji, congratulates them on their win, says they are two of the best dressed wrestlers ever and great role models for kids. Jesse and Fuji talk about Fuji's secret weapon, his face paint. Ever since he's out of the face paint, they've been unstoppable. So some classic Jesse Heelan here. Then it brings us to our next match, and that is the Tag Team Championship match. We've seen the British Bulldogs challenging the new champions, Demolition. I thought it was a pretty cool match on paper. See if it delivers. And I should actually clarify, this is not a Tag Team Championship match. They're fighting the champions. It is a non-title bout, so get that clear. Matilda leads out the Bulldogs, and Vince calls her the Wonder Dog. Demolition has an awesome presence as they storm to the ring with Fuji. Vince says Jesse's out of shape. His Smash pounds on Davey to open things up. Dynamite gets a blind tag and levels Smash with a clothesline. Smash decks Dynamite and tags Axe, but Dynamite grabs the arm and the challengers work it over. Smash sneaks in, nails Dynamite, and the champs take over and start to work together on battering him, focusing on the back, including a Smash bear hug. Dynamite escapes and tags Davey, who comes in and cleans house to a hot pop. Davey, Dynamite ends up on the floor. Fuji stomps on him until Davey and Matilda chase Fuji away. Demolition tries to follow, but a bunch of refs block their path. After the break, the Bulldogs are back at beating on the champs with the cane drawing the DQ. The champs escape as the Bulldogs stand tall. I thought it was fine while it lasted, but it was a bit disappointing. It moved at a good pace, but it was real short. The finish was lame. And it looks like maybe they're keeping the Bulldogs strong, maybe for a loop around of title shots. With that said, I thought this is a spot where Demolition could have looked stronger. It's like they've been unstoppable, and they get the titles, and then we get this kind of pussyfoot finish where the Bulldogs just bail them out. I thought at the very least, so Dynamite looks better in the ring. His back looks better, so that's a plus. But the Matilda stuff is dragging them down now. They should have kind of phased her out after the Islander storyline. Maybe they get her back, and they say, we're not going to bring her to ringside anymore. It's too dangerous. Something like that. Like it's just getting goofy of these two badasses. Now we're like this into a dog. It's a little bit much. So I went 2 stars. Like I thought it was fine until the finish, which was just shitty. What do you think, Peter?
Oh my God. All right. Who at NBC decided that it was a good idea to let Dynamite Kid talk, even if it was just 10 words? I mean, whoever was responsible for that should have been fired immediately. God, just bugged me to no end. Fuji has a Winnebago. I found that a bit curious from the promo, and also putting the dog on the front because it's a flat front on the Winnebago doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. It would just prevent oxygen from getting into the engine. Anyway, I thought Dynamite looked really, really off. There was something. Maybe I'm just judging him by a different standard based on what he was, but boy, this match was just so strange. Like you have the natural NBC commercial break where they chase Fuji to the back, and then right afterwards is the DQ, like right when they get back from commercial break, where Demolition is getting the crap beat out of them by the Bulldogs, who have like two halves of a cane. This whole thing was really puzzling, and I didn't understand it at all. I'm going to give it half a star just because of Demolition's performance, but boy, yeah, you're right. The Bulldogs, with the fawning over the dog, they needed to write that dog off in some way.
They should have said Tama eat it or something, you know? Like just end it.
Fuji would have been the natural guy to do something there. Not that I would have endorsed that, but boy, those guys, I mean, you want to talk about sell-by dates with Davis. I think the Bulldogs, their time was pretty much up. I'm realizing now, watching it in retrospect, you might not agree, Scott, but that's kind of the way I was seeing this.
I gave this a star and a half, and yeah, the dog thing, the Matilda thing was played out. The Bulldogs were probably played out at this point. But if you were going to have a legitimate contender for Demolition in the short term, you would have probably wanted a better performance than this. I agree with you on that. And Demolition, yes, has indeed looked incredible in this stretch, utterly incredible. And this this match needed to be better, needed to be a little more dominant. Unless you were, if you wanted a non definitive finish, they should just start beating the shit out of each other and end in a double DQ. See, that would be kind of cool. If you just have the four of them just pounding each other until the refs just decides I can't take this anymore and calls for the bell. I think that – because the Bulldogs are the kind of team that I think could have pulled that off that others can't. Like Demolition couldn't do that even to Strikeforce. It couldn't do it to like the Killer Bees or somebody in terms of babyface teams. But it fits the Bulldogs to just go in there and get into a punching match and force a double DQ because they've lost control. So if you're looking for a better ending, I think that would have worked out if you were going to, like you said, JR, if you were going to put these two teams in a loop of title matches, this was probably a good, that probably would have been a better finish.
Yeah, it just made Demolition look kind of stupid.
Bulldogs kind of look dopey too. Right. They should have just beat each other up, had a double DQ, and then start the loop.
Yeah.
The Matilda thing has to go. That ship sailed in Atlantic City with Bobby's awesome dog suit, anti-dog suit.
It was an easy out. Like I said, they could have just said, yeah, oh, we want to protect her. We can't risk her getting taken again, so we're not going to have her ringside anymore. You know, like, it was an easy out. But they kept trucking her out there. All right, Gene's with Don Morocco and Billy Graham, who says they'll fight fire with fire. Morocco has a $1 million body, and Morocco says he will take a piece of DiBiase tonight. Gene talks to Ted DiBiase and Virgil. DiBiase says he's the rightful WWF champion and was robbed twice. Says he's going to get Savage however he can, including winning tonight, and he will be champion eventually. And it does bring us to another WrestleMania 4 rematch as Don Morocco takes on Ted DiBiase. Morocco, looking for revenge, gets a warm welcome along with Graham. He starts hot, flipping DiBiase around, battering him to the corner. DiBiase bails to regroup as Jesse says Morocco's a better brawler. DiBiase slides in, but Morocco crushes him with a clothesline. He gets a power slam for two before Virgil makes a save. Graham backs off as Virgil as Jesse calls superstar an old man. DiBiase takes over with a clothesline. He gets a suplex for two. Morocco turns things around, gets two on a slam before punching away some more. DiBiase suckers in Morocco, hits an uppercut and a slam, and then covers. Morocco puts his foot on the rope, and the ref counts three, missing it, and gives the win to Ted. I like that finish, actually. I thought it had some good frustration to Morocco and Graham. It plays off Virgil putting Ted's foot on the rope earlier. Morocco does the same thing, and the ref misses it. And it protects Morocco, gives DiBiase a win. I thought it was fun, actually. It was on par with Mania. It could have some juice, maybe another 5-7. But again, face Morocco continues to be a bit of a revelation for me. I thought it was a fine win for DiBiase to keep him strong. And, you know, maybe it's building to something with Morocco having official, you know, issues with the officials or something. We'll see. But I kind of liked it. It was a finish we haven't seen too much.
Yeah, I agree. I gave it a 1.5 stars. Of course, you're mumbling to yourself when Mean Gene goes, Billy Graham, you have done wonders since managing Don Morocco. Yeah, like showing him where the closest Walgreens is. It continues this renaissance. I feel like we've had JR with Morocco. That when you just look at the TV matches and the pay per views, like, oh, he's big and fucking jacked and can't do anything. When in reality, he actually ended up becoming a better worker for what he could do. Because let's be honest, the tail end of his heel run, he was just a lazy sloth. But suddenly is motivated, and he's putting on solid stuff. He's more mobile, which is kind of, you know, funny to say because he's a lot tighter, you know, in terms of mobility. And just feels more motivated. Maybe he was assuming, you know, he would be the guy next in line instead of Beefcake for Honky. I don't know.
Yeah, he's just wrestling with more energy. And
yeah.
And he's a pretty good seller. You know, like, and his comebacks are pretty good. So I think part of the problem was as a heel, especially towards the end when he put on all the weight and really bulked up, you know, his offense wasn't enough to, like, carry whole matches. So I think in this role where he can just have, like, energetic spurts and just kind of sell the rest, I thought it's just a better fit for him.
It was, absolutely. And I really dug it. And I don't know, Peter, if we haven't had a chance to chat with you for a little bit about Morocco, but I do really feel like but JR and I both do, that he's kind of gotten motivated in this face run. And actually, if you could say it with your fingers crossed, maybe a better wrestler.
I actually am looking at it from the other side of things and from DiBiase, because he's so good around this time. I think he got more out of Morocco than anybody else that Morocco was facing during this run. Certainly more than Butch Reed the Dino Bravo series with Morocco was just the worst. But
see, I didn't mind their match that we saw recently. Didn't they fight again after Mania or no?
They had a match. They have a match at SummerSlam. Bravo Morocco.
Thinking of something else, yeah.
But that DiBiase Morocco match in the second round of the tournament was pretty good, a pretty good 8-minute match. And this one, not quite 8 minutes, I don't think. But as I said, I think DiBiase got more out of him than other people did. Jesse taking the shot at Billy Graham for being an old man. I have to confess that when I was 9 years old, I thought that Billy Graham was like 70 years old. Like if I had to hearken a guess at how old that guy was, I would have been off by like 20 something years. But when you watch this show on the network, and people complain about the music dubs, you know, for various things, this one has a double tragic music dub, because the one from Morocco is like the biggest downgrade of all time, because it goes from Jesus Christ Superstar to like this weird peppy thing that you might hear in like a department store or something that it's horrible. And then did you notice for DiBiase, they dubbed in his music that didn't exist until 2 years later?
I don't think I even noticed that.
Like I was so mad when they did that.
Why would he even do that? It's like he had music in the show.
It's like as bad as when they do the Chris Jericho WWE theme from like 1998 WCW. It just kills me when that happens. But this matchup makes sense. Just like I think this is a very well booked show from start to finish. Jesse at one point says that Ted can't brawl with Morocco, which I thought was a strange statement, but it did prove that Ventura never watched DiBiase wrestle in Mid-South. Jesse wasn't trading tapes with Schumacher or any of those to see early Ted. But what you'd said with the finish, and the finish did make sense in terms of protecting Morocco, but I saw something somewhere, and I don't know where it was, that Virgil screwed up there and was supposed to push Morocco's foot off the rope
The
two count. And he didn't. And you could see Morocco pointing. And I don't know if he was gesturing to the official or to Virgil. It would work either way. But because Virgil's right there, if he had pushed Morocco's foot off the rope, it would have been a nice mirroring with how he put DiBiase's foot on the rope.
Yeah, that would make more sense. I just figured they were starting an angle where Morocco was going to start getting, you know, pissed at refs or something weird like that. So, but that makes a lot more sense if Virgil was fucked up. And it would have played off earlier, like you said.
Yeah,
I did like the line that Vince had when Jesse said he's an old man, and he goes, and Jeff and Vince in his Vince voice goes, but look at his arms, and then Jesse goes, yeah, but his body's old. Literally ridiculous. Look at those arms.
Imagine them wrapped around you, inside of you. All right, Mean Gene's with Randy Savage and Liz. We get more macho things from him. And then that brings us to our final match of the night. Every now and then we get the sixth match on Saturday's Main Event, and we got one here. And that is Ravishing Rick Rude taking on Coco Beware. Could this be the night, gentlemen, that we get the good Rick Rude Dode AF match? We'll see. We haven't run across one yet. Rude shits on the crowd, does his usual routine to good heat as he sashays around. Coco dances out to Pile Driver for this fun match on paper, and another shot for Rude to impress. Rude attacks at the bell, but Coco comes back with headbutts and a nice dropkick. Rude finds a seam, lands a jab, and he gets to work with kicks and forearms, zeroing in on the lower back. Rude gets a suplex and heads up top and hits a fist drop. Rude keeps hammering away until Coco turns the tide and sends Rude flying with a big backdrop. Rude dodges the drop kick and snaps off the Rude Awakening for the win. That was actually pretty fun. It was short, but a good cooking, to really get cooking. But I thought both guys were good and crisp. I thought Rude was really on point here. Coco, bounced all around for him. That was a really solid showcase. I thought it was one of the best Rude matches we've seen so far. I went 2 stars on it, and I kind of wish there was more to it. But Coco really worked hard to get him over. What do you think, Peter?
Yeah, this was a pretty good one for Rude in what I like to call the heel build-up spot, where you have that last match of the night. It's kind of like when you bring in a reliever in a 5-run game to, quote-unquote, just give him work.
Right.
And, this match with Coco... it's funny to hear you say that this is the first decent match that Rude has had, because he did have so many stinkers, and I don't know how often he's been on MSG for you guys up to this point, but I mean, he had a bad match. He had a bad match with Steamboat at Royal Rumble, which it just says everything. He gets some more bad music dubs with Rude's theme, which
terrible.
Which I didn't understand. I don't understand it, because they dub it over as he walks to the ring, and then when he does the "what I'd like to have right now" bit, afterwards the music starts up again, and it's his original theme.
Yeah.
So they dubbed over part of it, and then forgot to do the back end of it. The neck breaker, because he had switched off the Argentine back breaker not that long before this. Probably around the time of
It was right after Mania. I think we covered it last week in the notes. I'm pretty sure it was right after Mania. He debuted the kiss and the move, I'm pretty sure.
I think it was 3 weeks before this, because the Superstars that aired on the 30th, he had kind of a Well, should I give it away? What happened on the 30th, where he ran into?
I think we talked about it. I think we talked about it last week.
Okay. Yeah, with Cheryl Roberts in the crowd, and so I think that it was a good spot for him to heat him up at the same time that Jake thing is going to get going in earnest. And Coco, I mean, they were having Coco job to Bobby Heenan, for God's sake. So, I mean, he can just be easily sacrificed here.
I gave this 2 stars. It was definitely, at least from a selling perspective, maybe one of Rude's best performances. I like that he Coco hit the drop kick after the hip, after the... it was almost like a hopscotch thing rather than like a leapfrog. But I thought Rude was fine. I'm wondering at this point now, maybe he can handle a longer match. I agree with you, Peter. I was kind of stunned when that Rumble match never came off, did not come off as it should have. But I think we're at the point now where probably Rude maybe can get into that groove again or try to. I thought it was fine here. And you know, he hit a pretty good Rude Awakening, and the fact that it's the end of the show kind of helps Rude, and no one's really gonna remember. They just remember that he won, and whether the match was good or not, you know, he's neither here nor there. But it's a good spot for Rude here, because you know, he's not really the focus heel at the moment. We've handled the big focus heels, DiBiase and Gang and Demolition. So good spot for him on the show, and you know, Coco always looks good putting somebody over. So good way to end the show with, but I think that Rude is due for a real good match and a real good feud, and obviously, you know, he'll get going with Jake soon, and even their match could have been a lot better. But WrestleMania 4, as we figured out, JR, is a tough show to really slam anybody for bad match or not a bad match. Like, obviously the laying out of that show was not great. And at WrestleMania, those two guys didn't work under the time limit type storyline. They actually wrestled like it was a normal match. And maybe they should get better chances down the line. Which may help Rude, but I thought he was fine here, and you know, Coco did the right thing for him, and it was a good win in the show.
All right, and then there we will. Jesse and Vince show up at the end to wrap things up, and that'll bring us to our awards for the evening. So why don't we go ahead and dive into those as we close this one out. Match of the night, I thought, was a pretty clear choice tonight, and that is Randy Savage versus the One Man Gang.
Agreed.
Yep.
The Cousin Junior for the worst match of the night. Again, easy choice for me on this evening, and that was Beefcake versus Danny Davis.
I concur.
I actually give it to Demolition versus the British Bulldogs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Really? Interesting.
I do extra writing always for you, Peter. Get in my ass. All right. The Hogan Award for the MVP of the night, I went with Bobby. Actually, I actually liked him a lot in the opener. I thought he did a great job, and I didn't think anyone really stood out in ring on this night. And I thought his spot, both jumping over the rope and the knee drop to break up the pin, were great. And I really enjoyed him this evening, so I'm giving him the nod.
I was kind of torn on this one today because there were a lot of nominees. You're right, JR. There wasn't a standout in-ring performance. So I'm not going to just drop dead, give it to Savage. Not that he wrestled poorly, but tonight was one of those nights where he just was good rather than great. I almost want to give it to Andre. just for the Duggan thing, you know, at the beginning when he does the hoe and the work in the middle at the end of the match. I don't know, Peter. Who do you go with? I'm gonna have to listen to yours and see where I go.
I just like how Andre is keeping his MVP streak alive for, on these shows. It's like I keep making my analogy about Andre being the closer. It's like he's Dennis Eckersley in 92. He's just going to win the MVP by accident, like over the course of the season.
Well, sadly, Andre, he hasn't won in the last couple, but he did win how many? One, two. He won 5 out of 6, at least whole or split on this show throughout 88. And then the last two he has not. So.
Yeah, I think, and I'll probably slow down as we get to the fall. MVP for me is Savage, and part of it is not necessarily just the match that he had, although it was the match of the night. It's that they built the show around him, mm-hmm. and as the showcase to him, because Hulk Hogan is not there.
Right.
And this is the first Saturday Night's Main Event where he's not there in any capacity. So a lot was on Savage's shoulders for this one, and I think he delivered, quite frankly.
We know what's got.
I think I'm gonna agree with you, JR, and go with Bobby, because I think I can't just put Andre, but I put an extension of the whole Heenan family, mm-hmm. and since Bobby's the face of it, I'm gonna roll with it, because they were really great in the beginning of the show, and they kind of helped put Duggan over. So I'll put Bobby, but I think it's an extension of the whole Heenan family. So, but I'll go with Bobby.
All right, our Uncle Elmer for the worst work of the night. It's not really fair because he got hurt, but also he sucks, and I'm fine. Be comfortable with that thought. And that's Danny Davis for me.
I agree.
Oh, well, I have a very hot take here. My worst worker of the night is the Dynamite Kid.
Oh, God.
Just because he looked totally off, and his working style reminds me of another guy who committed multiple homicides. So.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
All
yeah.
right, let's go with our best.
O.J. Simpson.
Yes.
All right, our best moment of the night, I went with Savage's big elbow to pin the gang. I thought that was the key move and the key match from the big moment. Savage gets the pin, and the crowd just goes nuts when he hits it. It just looks great.
I like Vince going, look at those arms. No, only thing. Yeah, the Savage elbow was big. He hit it. He drilled it pretty good. Put home the win.
Yeah, much as I would like to give it to Jesse's wounded water buffalo and heat line, it's definitely the Savage elbow. Just iconic.
All right, the Morocco Award for the most juiced up wrestler of the night goes to Don Morocco.
The Rock.
What a surprise. All right. There he goes. What a guy. All right. And in the very anticipated first Ken Patera award on a night that does not feature Ken Patera for worst hair. He's won 4 straight, but he was on all those. We have our first non-Patera award winner. And I went with Danny Davis on this evening. He had this weird ass pompadour poofed up and just looked real awful. And he just looked all disheveled. So that's my choice for the first non-Patera award winner.
Oh, I want to give it to him. I thought Jimmy Hart's weird short hair under the beret looked kind of strange too, though. And Coco's fro looked a little poofy tonight too. He was really fluffed out. Danny Davis's hair did look. I'm going to go with Jimmy Hart.
Okay.
And that terrible cut.
I think Davis had to have his hair look like that so it would mean something when a little bit of it got cut off. So for worst hair, I'm going to go with Duggan just because it looked like he hadn't washed it since the start of his Mid-South run.
Very possible.
So, yeah.
All right. There you go. Some variance when Patera's not around. All right. Overall grade, I thought this was a step back. Our last Saturday Night's Main Event in March was great, and our one early in January was not. So I think we kind of split the middle here. It had some good stuff. The booking was pretty good. We didn't really get any great matches. And, you know, some of the stuff disappointed. So I went 5 out of 10. It felt very middle of the road to me, Scott.
I agree. I'll go with 5 as well. The matches were not awesome, but they didn't suck per se. A lot of advancement in terms of Savage, which is the main focus here. It served its purpose. Also served its purpose. DiBiase, still a hot contender. And you've got Beefcake, Duggan, and Morocco, too. You know, great faces. Without your Intercontinental Champion on the card to make them legitimate as future contenders. So right down the middle, 5 out of 10 for me too. Peter?
Jeez, I, I to go back to the Morocco award, I kind of forgot about the Ultimate Warrior for that. But yeah, Morocco is the winner emeritus. There's something weird about this show, and I don't know if it's just the lack of Hogan or what, where I enjoyed it well enough, and the show was fine and easy to get through, but it just felt like something was lacking. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the post-Mania blues or malaise that you'd often see. I mean, it had happened, you know, the previous couple of years after the two WrestleManias before, at least in my opinion. So I like you, I give it a 5 out of 10.
All right, so there you go. Variance in the awards, but the final grade across the board, 5 out of 10. All right, that brings an end to Saturday Night's Main Event. Scott, next week we'll be back at MSG for a stretch of three house shows that are beginning. We'll be beginning with the May. We actually have a brand new guest. Never done a Vintage Vault. We'll save that surprise for next week, but it should be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Interesting, so we look forward to that. And actually, our next two will have new guests, so excitement in the air. All right, why don't we take a moment before we plug everything else and talk about episode number 500. As you mentioned earlier, we're in episode 494, and as you know, we don't move as quickly as we used to back in the old days. That would have been like a week away in the old days, but starting after next week, we're going to be switching the format to every other week, at least through summer and into the fall. Just busy schedules and everything else going on. It's going to make things a little bit easier for us to manage and prepare. So next week we'll be back, and then from there on out, we'll be going every other week here on Monday nights for the Place to Be podcast. That said, episode 500, that puts it right around mid-September. And our thought that we've agreed upon is we're going to bring back something that, you know, we have a lot of things, Scott, that I feel like we were kind of innovators on, you know, the live watch stuff. You know, I thought we always did great interviews. We used to do the headlines. We had the asshole of the week. You know, like, we have a lot of little concepts scattered throughout our 500 episode catalog. But we also have one that was always really popular. We've done a few of them, and they always bring a lot of interest, a lot of excitement, a lot of angst. And it's always, it's cool to prep for, and it's fun to do. And it's been, by the time we were to do this on episode 500, it'll be about 2 years since our last one. And that is a Place to Be podcast tradition, the old trivia contest. The last one we did was our Halloween 2016 episode. So it's been a while. It's been about 2 years. But we've had a bunch before in the past. And for episode 500, as a thank you to all of our listeners and all of our fans that have gotten us this far, we're going to open this contest up to anyone who's interested in partaking. Now, I will qualify that statement by saying if we get a lot, like an overwhelming number of people, where it's like just too many questions to do, we'll probably have some kind of play-in thing where you have to qualify. But for now, if you're interested, just reach out to me or Scott and let us know, and we're going to keep a master list. And we're telling you this now because you have 2 months to think about whether you want to get in and also be prepared. So we'll have the date official as we move forward. But the goal, you know, the only two criteria are you have to have Skype and you have to be available on the night we're recording. We're going to do it all in one night. So if you can't be available on a Monday night in mid-September from figure 8:30 Eastern on, then don't bother submitting that you're going to be in. You know, we'll figure out the format, as some may say. We'll figure that out. We'll figure out maybe a little bit of a prize. And as we move forward, we've got plenty of time. But we want to throw that out there, start to build the hype and the excitement. So the episode 500 trivia contest is official. You may begin submitting your interest now. And Scott, any thoughts?
I'm pumped. I love doing trivia.
And we can hear the keyboard.
Yes. You know what I mean? Yes, we can. also want to mention that our friend here, Peter Winston, will be playing an integral role as well. He'll be helping us craft the questions and be our MC for the night. He'll be keeping score and kind of poking fun and cracking wise throughout the show as well. Is that right, Peter?
Yes, sir. Yeah, the brain is already in motion trying to come up with various levels of questions. And to try not to make them too obscure, as I am often want to do on my own show.
Well, you should listen to Greetings from Allentown, because you may pick up on some questions that may show up in the trivia tournament. And as always, too, there will be a Place to Be Nation component, too. So there'll be questions about our history and the site and the show. So you got to know your PTB history to really, if you want to score excellently on this thing. So anyway, a lot of excitement there. We're pumped about it. Episode 500, it'll be a big one. Our last show ever. No, I'm looking. Maybe. But no, we're looking forward to it. 500 is a really cool number. 500 is a really cool number. It's pretty amazing, Scott, that we've made it there. So Something to be proud of. Something to celebrate. And it's kind of fitting, too, that episode 499 right now is slated to be SummerSlam 88. Because, you know, pay-per-views are kind of what we started with. So it's fitting that our final non, you know, trivia contest anniversary, you know, the one closest to 500 will be a pay-per-view. So that'll be neat. All right. Yeah. So that all said, we will be here in between next week and mid-September with many other episodes. But those are those two laid out for you. Also want to point out, we had a brand new Wrestling War Zone looking at the 10/16/95 week of wrestling TV. We're on Nitro, and you can hear about me and Chad's miserable foibles as we tried to get that thing recorded. We had all kinds of issues. So listen in for those. Details also at episode 2 of the No Holds Barred podcast with myself and Aaron. Dove deeper into the GWE tag team project. We broke down some teams and their cases. We talked about our favorite live wrestling events that we've been at. We've talked some sitcoms, talked some XFL. So check that out as well. Those are both on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. What do you got, Scott? Anything else going on?
Well, of course, up right now, Brother Nate and I did the final part of our 10-part Top 100 GWWE Greatest Singles Wrestler of All Time, and we talked a little tag team as well. This week, the newest episode of Main Event will be recording this week. Nate and I will have our boy Brandon Howard on. He'll join us to talk about the first 6 months of the year in wrestling, fiscally and creatively, and look ahead to the second half. And then Steve Willey will be with us, and we will be doing our next classic TNA pay-per-view recap. So that'll be this week's episode of Main Event. That'll drop on Thursday evening. So looking forward to that.
Peter?
Is this where I plug?
Yep.
Because I was actually writing down what I was going to plug. But greetings from Allentown this week, episode 73. will be WWF All-American Wrestling from February 23rd, 1986. And it's kind of a loaded show. We got Savage versus Tito Santana from the Boston Garden. I'm sure you know what that means. Hulk Hogan in Piper's Pit. Junkyard Dog versus Terry Funk, where Terry gets help from, well, an old friend and compadre from the Double Cross Ranch. And also tune in to see how I connect the overthrow of Ferdinand Marcos and the Philippines Revolution back to wrestling. It's pure artistry on Greetings from Allentown this week, episode 73, Thursday mornings on the Pro Wrestling Only feed.
Uh-huh. All right. Very exciting. Check that out. We also had a new podcast drop today on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, and that is the Hales Brothers. Dylan and Devin broke down the first half of WWE in 2018. So be sure to take a look at listen to that. I'm sure they had a lot to say. That'll be interesting. Guys, I had my annual Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest blog up. So every year since 2013, I reviewed that event, and I could not break that tradition. So you can read all about Joey Chestnut's record-breaking performance right there in my thoughts. Mm-hmm. And also, Scott, I don't know if we talked about this or if it dropped after. I don't remember, but I wanted – oh, maybe we did because I butchered her name. Stacey O'Loughlin's primer. Fuck me. Primer for – her Diva Deep Dive series, and she has a new one coming this week that is excellent. It kind of looks at like what the Divas had to deal with and battle against throughout their decade run leading into the Revolution. So it's kind of like a second primer into her what her series will be, but it's really, really well done. So be sure to check that out. I think it's dropping on Tuesday, so tomorrow. So be sure to listen to that. Be sure to read that. It was my first day like back at work after some vacation, so I'm exhausted. Be sure to read Stacy's piece. It's great. That's it. I'm done. We're out. All right. Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, Place2BNation, Instagram, Tumblr, PlaceNation Wrestling, PlayStation Pop, and Pro Wrestling Only, all on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe and rate us. Leave some feedback for us to read. And also, you can leave feedback for anything else for Chad and I will read it on the next Wrestling War Zone. So we already get some good thoughts in there too. All right, that's it. That's Peter Scott. I'm out. Bye. See you. If the girl gets too close, I need some room to escape when the moment arrives. I tell her it's all a mistake, but that's not how I feel. No, that's not the woman I know. She's undeniably real. So leave a tender moment alone.
But it's not only me breaking down when the tension gets high. Just when I'm in a serious mood, she is suddenly quiet and shy. Change the attitude tonight. I've run out of places to hide. And if that's how I feel, then it's the best healing I've ever had.